And that's where I kind of look at it, is like, especially with the reduction in physical sales on, I think, across the board in the music industry and on the artist side of things, every cent counts.
That's Nick Sullivan. I'm Steve Cleveland. This is Sync Club. Welcome to the club, Nick.
Hello, Steven. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Hey, tell us about Consonance Publishing.
Well, about 4 years old now. I've had a career as an audio engineer since about 2005. Started off, you know, most of my music career comes from audio engineering and making records. But I felt that there was a need in Denver, Colorado, even from our end as somebody who's producing albums, you know, at a studio, to just kind of help bridge the gap for, you know, songwriters, bands, recording artists. Really start getting their publishing taken care of. It's such a, there's a lot of nuance to working in music publishing. It's not easy, you know, it's not a logical business. So it seemed like there was a gap there. And so we just started kind of helping artists manage their publishing. And it's grown from there. You know, I think we have about 30 artists or, you know, and more songwriters, maybe like 40 total songwriters now that we have with us at Consonance. But yeah, it's kind of like been a great addition to a recording studio business, and it's kind of changed our business model too, because it's allowed for us to get creative as well in music publishing through, you know, producing content for Consonance Publishing with some artists that we kind of have started working with as, you know, artists originally, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mentioned the administrative part of publishing, and could you kind of just like maybe mention a couple of the main components of that? Because I think you're right. I mean, publishing in general is just really a very big mystery for most people.
Yeah, because it's constantly changing too. And when we got into the game, you know, 4 years ago, it was quite a bit different even then, you know. And, you know, I think that it's kind of been a journey to just find where you can even, you know, tie into royalties, you know. And that's been kind of fun, somewhat mm-hmm. frustrating sometimes, because it's like, if you don't do the homework and you talk to people into the industry, you probably wouldn't be able to just look it up online and find out, you know, oh, Music Reports does this, and you know, where and even that has changed too, who's using who for those types of royalties. So mm-hmm. and that's where I kind of look at it, is like, especially with the reduction in physical sales on, I think, across the board in the music industry and on the artist side of things, every cent counts. And it's been valuable for us to just really, you know, because like some of that, even like, you know, I would say Harry Fox took a couple years before we ever saw like cents, you know, and it was always like, are we doing this right? And then finally, surely, you know, eventually the revenue starts coming in, but that's why you don't even know where it's coming from. I mean, you can kind of tell, but sometimes the time stuff is like, oh, finally, this is now, you know, producing revenue 2 years later after we registered the song. So, and that's why it's a fun business in the bigger picture, because we've definitely enjoyed some of the hard work that we did 3 years ago that, you know, is paying off today. So,
well, that's good. You know, it's nice to get that payoff at some point. But it's funny because you mentioned Harry Fox, and I have a friend who got like a check, and I think it was like for 12 cents. It was insane.
Yeah, we have a picture of our 0.0 or 1 cent check they sent us, you know.
Yep.
Got to start somewhere is how we look at it. And I really truly believe that in publishing, it's like, it could be very demoralizing, especially, you know, I see it. I was an artist too, and I toured and sold albums. And, you know, if you could sell 10 albums a night, that was amazing. That was such, you know, that paid the gas first and foremost. And now to make $100 on streaming revenue even and publishing, you know, even worse, it's hard. It's tough sledding. So,
yeah,
and that's where I guess there is some promise in the bigger picture, where it's like, well, there's more revenue streams, and if you can get on the road and play shows, there's an opportunity to probably, you know, make more money than you ever had. But for just, you know, the, you know, we call them hobbyist bands, it's you know, very rare that you find that they get a return on their investment these days, especially if they're spending thousands of dollars in recording studios, you know.
Yeah, good point. So the term music library, I've heard it a couple times. I've asked some people about it, and I still don't have a good understanding of what is a music library. Can you help me out with that?
Well, I think you have a separation, and this is something that's taken me some time to understand, the difference between, like, you know, songs and artist-based, you know, compositions and master recordings versus production music, and I would almost say library. So, you know, songs and master recordings. And we've worked with, you know, clients on the recording side of things, and then we, you know, we're making more inroads into the library side of things, where libraries, you know, like they have a specific like a rock library or a sports library, and it's, you know, content cultivated for a specific destination and use, especially for licensing and sync, you know, because I would never think it, and we have like, you know, we have a catalog, but I don't really find a library would be much on the artist or song side of, in that side of things, but I could definitely see it as a, you know, production music terminology. And, you know, I was just at the production music conference, and that's why, like, I even think it's good advice. It's like in those types of situations is to pick a specific destination and write 10 songs or 10 pieces in that destination. And then you have a, you know, sci-fi library or a, you know, comedy library, you know, so that's mm-hmm. right. Does that help you out there?
Yeah, I think so. So like what you guys offer on your website, you know, I'm looking at it right now and it looks, you know, you've got pop, electro pop, indie rock, indie pop. And I've listened to some of the songs. They're really cool. Like I really dig, especially the indie pop stuff. That was, you've got some really quality stuff.
There's some great talent we work with. And that's why I think we're kind of like developing talent in all kinds of different direction. And we're working on some production music catalogs, because that's, again, something where I think part of what we try to do is just educate what the industry wants. And on production music, that for sure is something that's like way more based around 30, 60, 90 second increments. Whereas songs, you know, it's a completely separate use. And, you know, there is some instrumental potential on songs, but that's where it's really not written for, you know, licensing and sync.
Is there value for a songwriter to write like or do versions of their songs like in that 30, 60, 90 second to have those type of cuts?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just had a situation where we do spend some time, you know, we have interns that work at the studio, and this is where they come in handy sometimes, is to do cut downs of versions of songs, because, you know, this specific need that we filled for like a local radio spot, I just grabbed our 30 second version of the songs. In that sense, I let them listen to the full versions of the songs, but then we have these cut downs and I threw it in the session and it was done, you know, so that saves a lot of time, because that's also where sometimes songs maybe lose opportunities, is just having to edit it down. I mean, some songs aren't going to, you know, work good on a 30 second edit, you know.
Sure.
You can hear those crazy fades that you have to do to make that happen, you know.
Right.
So, and that's, again, why there's such, I think, a smart, even to, you know, say to songwriters, maybe have production music versions of your song, because I think there's also just so many uses in different versions of songs. You know, you see all these cool covers and they're just so broken down, you know, and I think those are valuable just to kind of like show that you're thinking of the industry, you know. And sometimes I feel like, you know, for licensing and sync, they love production music because they're like, you know, you need us more than we need you. And songs are inherently more expensive anyways, especially if you want to use a bigger name. So I think if you can placate to what they're looking for in the bigger picture, which sometimes is like, does it work? Is it easy? You know, and just efficient to put into these situations. So yeah, I totally recommend it. And you know, that's what I think sometimes even the songwriting, if you want to have a career, you should think about that. I think there's examples in the LA and some of these, in those industries where there's people doing that specifically in how they write music, you know? So I think that's valuable.
I think so. And wow, you know, I hadn't thought about doing that. So
yeah, because I was like, you know, talking with somebody else about where our publishing stuff is. And I'm like, you know, it seems we're focusing more on licensing and sync and creating masters. We're not cultivating songs to pitch to like artists. And, you know, there's that kind of crossover where songs work good for licensing. And, you know, there's a huge business in that. But there's also this completely separate business that, you know, even for me, like we're choosing to focus on like Los Angeles and the licensing and sync, you know, industry out there versus like pitching songs in Nashville. Which is like a kind of a separate part of the industry. And that's where I've definitely learned that in music publishing, where, you know, there, it's such a wide array of things that involve music publishing and different end games. But that's where it's so crazy. I think the whole industry's flipped to the licensing and sync side of things, where it's like, yeah, like it's been hard on songwriters, I think, too, you know, like, because there's not as many artists out there playing, you know, just taking people's songs. Like Taylor Swift is writing her own songs now, you know? So it's been crazy to see how the industry has changed over time and will continue to do so, you know.
That's the only constant variable in this whole equation is that everything changes. So
I was going to say, yeah, the sad thing about it, though, is it seems like the value of music is continually decreasing versus increasing. I mean, there's, you know, I was at the production music conference. That's where some of the thing, you know, statements are going around, is just how tough it is because everybody's so hard up for the any dollar these days. So,
yeah, a lot of competition out there.
Yeah, but that's why I think it's also the industry itself demands a lot of this administrative kind of like, you know, barrier to entry, which I think is why it's so important to focus on that stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's purely administrative, most of the business, you know.
Can we talk about what the difference is between an exclusive and a non-exclusive deal is, and what does that mean? Like, and what does it mean to the artist that signs an exclusive or a non-exclusive deal with a company like yours?
Yeah, I mean, we only do exclusive just because I think it maintains authenticity and the confidence that you have the rights to go out and license this music. There are, I know, a lot of these third parties and like SongTrader stuff, which, you know, I'm sure there's opportunity here and there. But I think if you want to compete and try to make a career on it, you got to pick one and just go, you know, kind of trust that they're going to go and do their job. Because I think the one thing that happens is in the music industry, especially these days, is that if they see you in three places, it means you're probably desperate and you'll do anything to get a dollar. And, you know, that's where, say there's a sample in there or something, you know, it's just, there's so much liability in this part of the business that can be extremely bad for everybody. You know, sometimes it's like, yeah, well, maybe you take the time to find the right exclusive place and maybe you don't put your stuff out there. Or, you know, we kind of move stuff through SongTrader, you know, because there's some good visibility for some artists to go through SongTrader just as like branding. But, you know, that's why maybe on some artists we'll try it out for 6 months and then move on, because at some point, you know, when the exclusivity just is like a trust and like that they're going to do their job and we don't have to worry about it. Because, and that, you know, and that's why I kind of go for independent artists, it might be a good thing, but sometimes it's like there's so many hungry people that some people cut corners. And, you know, I think the most professional people out there are probably in exclusive agreements, you know?
Okay. So you mentioned making sure the rights are cleared or whatever. I see on your site that you do address that. You say 100% cleared, one-stop licensing. Can you kind of just speak to what that means and what does that look like?
I mean, that's just, it's fundamental to what we do, because the people we work with the licensing, we can't have any question that it's not 100% cleared, because, you know, a lot of this stuff comes down the pipe quick. The one thing we can't do is be trying to reach, you know, the drummer that lives in Arizona now that got married and has a kid but owns 20% of the songwriting. You know, that's just like not it. Because, like, you know, for some of these opportunities, I think that's where it's like, if you can't have that together, you probably won't get another call back. So it's fundamental of what we do, because that's why it's, you know, I think that's something we market too, is just like, we're a one-stop, 100% cleared. We can do a license in 15 minutes. You know, we have all the documents ready to go. And, you know, if they look us up online and they search the repertory of the PROs, that pulls up, you know, and that's, again, reinforcing the confidence. Because, like, if, you know, I think that's too in the industry, if they pull up the song and it's not registered, huge red flag, you know?
Right.
So it just, you know, and that's where I think it's taken us a long time to get it, but just have data authenticity to support our ability to go out there and get licenses. I just had a situation, I was asking about samples for some potential material, and it had samples, and we were just like, nope, sorry, not doing it at all, not even touching it with a 10-foot pole, because it's just not worth it, you know?
Yeah. So I noticed that you had some people on your website that are designated as writers. It's a big thing right now where people do co-writes. And so it seems like one of the things that you have to ask right before you even really start to write anything is, hey, do you have a publishing deal? And how does your business look at somebody doing a co-write with somebody outside of the company?
Yeah, I still am all for just the registration of the songs under, you know, a songwriter's publishing company first and foremost, and then you can always just take it from there. You know, our writers we list on the website are specifically more for like custom projects, where, you know, sometimes we've gotten, you know, briefs for a certain like need or destination or even covers. And that's where those writers on the website are more specifically for that kind of stuff. And again, you know, I'm not doing too much on like the songwriting and the co-writing thing right now. There's thoughts of doing like a songwriting camp, but most of that stuff is figured out before we, you know, engage with that, or we help it get figured out. Cause you know, we'll generally register the songs on some of the stuff that on the material that we work with. But like, I still think it's a good idea for every songwriter, you know, to have the deals between themselves. I mean, you know, cause that's why sometimes publishers are arranging this agreements, but then they can, you know, they can also go out and co-write with other writers where the said publisher of the 10 songs of the individual might not have anything to do with the co-writer. So and that's what I kind of recommend. So, and I think most songwriters learn too, they just, you need to write songs, co-write, do as much as you can to get more copyrights out there. And some people have exclusive publishing deals, but others, I think, encourage just more writing, because sometimes, like, what if the publisher doesn't like the song? That song's yours, you know, and you can self-publish it, or, you know, and that's why, you know, even just to have the ability to self-publish is still valuable. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It basically, what you're saying is that at least under your kind of deal, doing a co-write isn't really a deal killer because your writer has a publishing deal.
Oh, so no.
That's nice. I know that there can be some complications with some people and how they're signed, I guess, to a publisher.
But yeah, and that's why we're not like an exclusive. We don't do deals that are like, I think every deal that we've done, you know, with just working with artists, and that's not like in-house production kind of stuff, all that songwriting stuff is generally figured out, and you know, isn't exclusive. Like, we don't own, like, we own your next 10 songs, or and we decide which songs they are. We don't really do that. It's usually just around existing material.
Okay,
that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, so when your writers are you like will bring in your writer and have a specific song in mind that they're writing for.
Yeah, and those are mostly from briefs coming from, you know, some of the companies we work with. You know, we might do some more specific stuff around, like, lyrics, or, you know, and we are doing some production music libraries, but generally for the custom, that's why we list the writers for mostly for the custom side of things.
Do you, when you get a brief, I'm just wondering if you get the same kind of briefs that I see, where, like, I need to have a song turned in by 6 o'clock tonight. It's like, I would love to be able to produce or finish a song. Even if I have one like started, it's just like, well, it's great if I have something in the catalog, but if I don't, you know, it's like, well, that's just, that goes to the trash can, you know?
Or, you know, it depends. I still think you could use it. You know, I think it's valuable to do, because that's part of that game is the turnaround, you know, and I kind of enjoy that part of the business on that side because it's fun. We work with some hungry writers, so they're always excited about getting specific stuff. And sometimes I think it helps them out, you know, to have those types of targets, you know.
For sure. I can get that. I get that. So on that note, which type of songs are getting the most use in your opinion? And have you seen any common threads?
Anything that sounds like Imagine Dragons or, you know, Billie Eilish right now. But we have this artist, Creature Canopy, who's definitely our most successful artist. And it's electro synth pop.
Nice.
Because, you know, it just is hip. It's dancey. The BPMs seem to work out really nice for what people, you know, need. You know, a couple transportation spots for those guys. Mm-hmm. Perfect for transportation. And then kind of just that epic tom. You know, almost like trailer music now. You know, I think there's trailer music is influencing a lot of other genres now and modern music as well, which I think, like, you could say, like, Imagine Dragons is kind of trailer music-esque.
Yeah, it has that kind of epic feel to it.
Yeah. And that's where I think it's been valuable for me to just, like, you know, pay attention when I'm watching television of what's happening on there, because I think you can also just see, you know, it is, marketing is now leading the music industry and kind of has so much influence now on just the exposure side of things.
And this is kind of out of left field, but we talked about registering songs. Do you think that all the PROs are equal, or would you say that you've seen any, you know, without, I guess, if you're going to say something bad, don't.
Maybe no. Don't, but
I don't want to make enemies.
All I can recommend is that you just register it once and register it right. It seems like they're undergoing just so much of an increase of titles, you know, that it's hard to get their attention sometimes. But I've always just learned that the squeaky wheel gets, you know, the oil. I think they're all equal. I know CSAC pays out better on, like, radio royalties, but, you know, it's been really hard to get people into CSAC lately. So I don't know. That's why if it's like my recommendation is just if you register it right and you got all the information correct, it shouldn't be a problem. And try not to write a song called Loser or something, you know, make it something that is easily distinguishable away from someone else's song. Because that's the only thing I know that it's a pain in the butt with those things is if you have any problems on where the royalties are getting paid to, you know, it could be very long before anything gets fixed.
Well, yeah. So Beck's getting all your money or something.
Totally. Yeah. I think, you know, and most people don't think about that, but it can be a total administrative nightmare. You know, and that's where you got to make sure you give them as much info as possible to, you know, because it doesn't seem like there's any shortage of artists writing songs like Home or, you know.
Where have I heard this? Oh, well, yeah. That's the song I was just working on.
Yeah.
No, make I'm just it kidding. I'm kidding.
Just elaborate a little bit more. Be like Bon Iver and use just symbols or something. You know, like.
Yeah, you can't pronounce this one. You know.
Hey, it doesn't matter as long as the metadata is correct and it points the royalties to where it needs to go, well, right?
Yeah, okay, and that's a great segue. I wanted to ask you about your metadata. I noticed that on your webpage you link to your Disco account. What do you ask or what do you put into your metadata that makes sure that the folks that listen to it can get a hold of you? When they need it, they know who to find.
It's really important, I think. And it just also, again, allows you, you know, if a music supervisor gets your file and throws it into whatever program that they use, that it pulls up all that stuff. Because if it doesn't, it's just the complete opposite reaction where it's like, well, thanks for not helping me out, you know, and how am I supposed to ever, you know, search this? Because I think that's where, you know, you want to make sure you have as much data that you can provide so that when people search, it's really a searchable game. And, you know, some of the people we work with on the licensing sync side, they ask for a lot of information. So we've tried to like really streamline that. Plus, we're also like, you know, on the recording studio side of things, like mastering, you know, albums and doing that, which is still DDEX and all these cool things that they're talking about is coming slowly. And it's going to be hard to get universality on that. But that's where I kind of go back to like, you know, the spreadsheet of your songs, like. And what we do is we actually send these like jot forms to our artists to fill out so that we can hear it from them, what they feel this stuff is about, you know, and because you even want to have the lyrics be searchable too, which, you know, I think Disco allows for that, but, you know, most CD authoring doesn't, you know, MP3 is limited. So that's why there's still kind of like some functionality stuff that could be definitely improved. But, you know, I found a list somewhere that just gave me just, you know, keywords for music to describe stuff. So I had those printed out and it's a collaborative effort with, you know, the people that we work with, you know, like Jeff and myself and sometimes even some of the interns to get some of that information in there. But it's, you know, it's so important to get as soon as you can. And even for like authoring the files, even just the publishing info or something, even with most authoring programs, you're still only got the ability to do CD level, you know, embedding of data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting better. I think it's, at least there's more demand for it. But that's where I think some people never think about it after the fact. And it's very key at the beginning of any release, really, I think, to have all that stuff dialed in.
So would you recommend putting in things like lyrics and descriptive tags, maybe?
Some of the descriptive tags, you know, like Disco allows, there's like one field that you can put more data in that, you know, sometimes isn't searchable as well. So that, like, again, if somebody's searching for songs, and Disco's not, like, as much of a clearinghouse, you know, like, the bigger libraries, there's thousands of tracks that you search that are so dialed in, and it's, you know, like, those big companies are investing in AI for that, you know, so,
wow.
And they have the ability to embed the data on their own because they have their own kind of, like, you know, servers and stuff that distribute the music, like, Source Audio,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, now, you know, and, like, I know DistroKid allows, you know, you can enter in the DDEX data, so that'll show up on streaming. But then, you know, does it follow in MP3s or iTunes? I mean, iTunes is changing right now too, but that's where like it's sometimes it's difficult to get that information to them, or you just got to make sure that you create those files on your own. .rin is coming along, but it's still like hard for some people on the delivery side to get that information, you know, and the industry to me is so segmented that there's like some people do it this way and other people do it that way. I mean, if you're doing the iTunes things, you can only enter so much data in, but that's where you want to try to input that data if you can. At least the publishing info and like contact info, because that, I think that's why people like using those big companies is because, you know, they can search, you know, sad and they'll pull up, you know, 100 tracks about it, you know, and they can get really specific, you know, and especially right. Like BPM, huge, huge thing, you know, and I think you can do that on the MP3 encoding, but you can't put that on like general like music authoring. So You know, that's why it's kind of hard. You got to do 10 different things, you know, and that hopefully it all connects somewhere on their side of things, you know, because BMI and all the PROs are, you know, again, there's not a universal way of how they handle the data. Some want ISRC codes, some don't, you know, or it's, and that's where it's kind of, it's hard. You just got to learn your specific way of doing it, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that that really points out a terrific advantage of being able to work with a publisher. You have all the experience, you're doing this every day. Whereas like when you're DIY, you know, okay, so now I've got a release and maybe it's just a single. And now I've got to figure out, oh, what did I do last time? You know, I need to make sure it's got all these things, but at least you guys are touching this stuff frequently. So you're probably best of practice. And it's probably a good, one of the better, you know, reasons to work with.
Yeah. Or, you know, and further that to just the libraries. Cause that's where I still think that's, especially you're starting off, that's where you want to go because there's so much to the business and they have buyers. And there's a million uses of music right now happening in the world. And a lot of the professionals don't have time to, you know, look at your personal email and weed through thousands of songs to find the one, you know? So that's why we've kind of like figured that out too. It's, I mean, especially being from Denver, it's very valuable to have partners. And even for us, it's, you know, that's why it allows us to focus on what our strengths are, which is producing music. And in some senses now with the publishing stuff, handling the administrative side. You know, because that's enough right on its own, let alone shopping, you know.
Right. Now, so you mentioned like when you're starting out to use a library, like, or submit your music to a library.
Or just work, you know, like find a way, you know, that's where I think submissions, you know, there are those conferences and, you know, and it also, if you can find like just, you know, even school stuff or anything to, you know, just start building your resume, it all kind of leads up to those opportunities, mm-hmm. I think. But yeah, I mean, I've approached it where, you know, I'm trying to, you know, meet these people and build relationships, which is, I think, as valuable as anything in the industry. So sometimes that's why, I mean, yeah, try getting, you know, submitting the music and see what happens. But that being said, it's super competitive too. So.
Sure. Could you mention maybe two or three of the libraries out there that,
but just like APM, I mean, there's, you know, there's the kind of legendary big ones, but like, you know, MusicBed is a cool one that I think is cultivating really high content, like quality content on the artist side too. Mm-hmm. We've submitted stuff to them, you know, a couple of years ago and they weren't interested in what we had. And I could see why, you know, I think they get a lot of attention from, you know, ad agencies and hip people because they just have really cool stuff. And then Premium Beat too. I think, you know, in some of these, I think Premium Beat, I'm not sure if it's like it's submission and you have to be accepted or you can just get on there. No, that's where it's like you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
The professional people out there, it's like they have three libraries with APM and four libraries, you know, on extreme, you know,
extreme music.
And that's where they, right, you know, 20 libraries over, you know, like the licensability generally for some of that stuff, especially if it's not like you're going for the top hip hop dollar, it goes on forever, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, like, is that, you know, Universal, I think, just bought, Killer Tracks. That's who Killer Tracks is. Yeah. I don't know. Because, like, the labels are now really recognizing, you know, that production music is super valuable, too. It's so interesting to me how there's still, like, the conditioned artist thing. Oh, I want to, you know, make it and be signed to a label. But there's this whole other universe, musical universe, in production music that is, you know, now dollars. You know, you can actually make dollars, not, you know, micro cents. But also just like really highly organized. It's really, I find it interesting the more I spend time around production music because I'm new to that game. You know, I've always been a music guy and a band guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of business that happens and it's competitive and, you know, but that's where like it's a global thing too. People are going to these huge websites for global usage where sometimes, you know, there's a lot of focus on just North America.
Sure. Sure. Well, hey, is there anything that we can help you promote?
Yeah, I've been working with this organization called Robbie's Hope, which is just a really powerful, it's a nonprofit that's about suicide prevention and engaging youth with the arts as a way of suicide prevention. That's been really rewarding to work on.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, we'll put a link into Robbie's Hope and put that in the show notes.
Cool.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for your time. I know that you're a busy guy.
Yeah, great talking with you. Let's go out and grab a beer sometime.
Yeah, we'll buy you some beers for sure. This is Steve Cleveland, and you've been listening to Sync Club. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you check out the show notes, where you can find additional information and links regarding our guest. Let us know what you'd like to hear about. You can do so by hitting us up at Twitter, username Sync Club Podcast. Hey, thanks for the hang. We'll see you here next week at the club.